Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Dan Trotter, Pretty Good Bible Studies. I am now going to cover Job chapter 24, verses 1 through 25. I will call this Job Replies, Where is God? Part 2. Because in our previous chapter, chapter 23, we entitled that chapter, Job Replies, Where is God? Part 1. What Job is trying to say is, I need you to explain to me, God, if I could just get a hearing in your heavenly courtroom, why am I suffering all this stuff? So Job is going to continue with this theme that has been seen all the way through the book of Job as he debates his three false friends. The last we heard from a false friend was in Job chapter 22 when Eliphaz basically told Job, hey, if you'll just repent, you'll be happy. You'll get all your stuff back. But of course, Job doesn't want to repent. He can't repent because he hasn't done anything wrong to deserve all this. And so the argument continues without an end in sight. So we start with Job 24, verses 1 through 4. And I will say this too, Job is also going to go back to the old problem of why do the wicked prosper? His false friends are trying to say the wicked never prosper. Therefore, Job, you are wicked because you're not prospering. And Job said, oh yes, the wicked do prosper. So don't tell me that I am wicked necessarily because I am suffering all these calamities. So that argument will come up in this chapter also. So let's start now in Job 24, verses 1 through 4. Job is speaking, I presume, to his false friends. Why does the Almighty not reserve times for judgment? Why do those who know him never see his days? The wicked displace boundary markers. They steal a flock and provide pasture for it. They drive away the donkeys owned by the fatherless and take the widow's ox as collateral. They push the needy off the road. The poor of the land are forced into hiding. Now, verse 1, Job says, why does the Almighty not reserve times for judgment? The NIV has, why does the Almighty not set times for judgment? What Job is looking for is a time for positive judgment from God to explain to him why he's suffering like this, to prove to him that he's innocent. I mean, after all, Job thinks God has appointed time for Job's judgment in a negative sense. Job 23, verse 14, last chapter. For he, God, this is Job speaking, for God performs what is appointed for me, and many such decrees are with him. So the bad stuff's been appointed. Well, how about some times for judgment being appointed? And when he says judgment, he means good judgment. I want a positive judgment, God, but where are you? In verse 1, Job says, why do those who know God never see God's days? Where are you, God? And how many times has the individual Christian in modern times felt that? Where are you, God? How long can this horrible garbage go on in my life? Now, Job starts in verse 2 talking about how the wicked get away with their sin and their crimes and they're not punished. Again, that's the old theme. Why, God, is there not a strict one-on-one correlation between evil and judgment? It's not. The evil do prosper sometimes. I don't understand that. So he starts in verse 2, the wicked displace boundary markers. Now, as we go through here, we're going to see, as the NIV Study Bible points out, that Job is crying out about the cruelty that is in the world and wondering why God takes so long to judge it. However, we need to remember that Job actually does believe God will ultimately judge the wicked. What he's saying is that wicked get away with it for a while. They're ultimately going to get blasted by God. I don't deny that. I don't deny God's justice. But I just wonder why they're able to get away with their crimes for so long without God judging them. Now, to show that God does believe in God's ultimate justice for the wicked, we can drop down to verses 18 through 24 of this chapter 24. Job is referring to the wicked. He says, they float on the surface of the water. Their section of the land is cursed. I'll have to explain surface of the water. That's hard to understand, but the rest of it's easy to see. The wicked's section of the land is cursed, so that they never go to their vineyards, because there's no grapes there, as dry ground and heat snatch away the melted snow, so Sheol steals those who have sinned. The wicked are going to die. The womb forgets them. Their own mother will forget them. Worms feed on them. They're remembered no more. So injustice is broken like a tree. The injustice of the evil is going to be broken. The unjust prey on the childless woman, yet God drags away the mighty by his power. And so forth. So we see that Job does believe in the ultimate judgment of the wicked. It's the penultimate prosperity of the wicked that bothers him, as it should bother you and me and everybody who's ever looked at the world. Now, Job just mentions some typical things that evil people do. Verse 2, the wicked displace boundary markers. Why would the wicked do that? Well, in order to steal the neighbor's land. This, of course, was a big no-no back then. It's mentioned in Deuteronomy 19:14, you shall not move your neighbor's boundary mark, which the ancestors have set, in your inheritance, which you will inherit in the land that the Lord your God gives you to possess. You shall not move your neighbor's boundary mark, because you're stealing from your neighbor's land. You just kind of take the boundary mark and move it further into his land, which expands your land. Deuteronomy 27:17, cursed is he who moves his neighbor's boundary mark. Cursed is he. Serious business. Proverbs 22:28, do not move the ancient boundary which your fathers have set. And so Job mentions a particularly evil thing that evil people do. They're thieves. And then he says they steal a flock. They provide pasture for it. They're just out and out thieves. They drive away donkeys owned by the fatherless. Not only are they thieves, but they steal from orphans, the fatherless. They take the widow's ox as collateral. And remember, the category of widows and orphans is especially protected in the Old Testament law, because widows and orphans especially excite our compassion. But these wicked people don't care. They take the widow's ox as collateral. Now, in the law, necessities were forbidden to be taken as a pledge. Exodus 22:26, if you ever take your neighbor's cloak as a pledge, you are to return it to him before the sun sets. That's so he can have something to keep him warm at night. Well, a widow needs an ox just to eat, just to stay alive. And you're going to lend money to a poor woman and she can't pay you back, and you're going to take her ox, she'll starve to death. That's what these evil people were doing. Job here is answering back to Eliphaz. Eliphaz had accused Job earlier of taking unjust collateral. In Job 22, verse 6, Eliphaz says to Job, for you have taken pledges of your brothers without cause. Either taking too much collateral, taking collateral for too long a period of time, or taking the wrong kind of collateral. There's lots of ways you can cheat debtors. Lots of ways you can do it. But these wicked people were doing it. And in verse 4, they, the wicked people, push the needy off the road. Now, John Gill suggests that's pushing the needy off the road of righteousness. No, I don't think so. That's too poetic, even though this is a poetic book. No. Gill is saying that the wicked take the needy from the way of righteousness by giving them a bad example. No. This is a literal road. As John Gill also suggests, the wicked arrogantly push innocent people out of the road. Sometimes they make the innocent people take circuitous routes instead of the straightforward accustomed paths, which is obnoxious. We go down to Job 24, verses 5 through 10. Job continues talking about what evil people are doing. Verse 5, like wild donkeys in the desert, the poor go out to their task of foraging for food. The wilderness provides nourishment for their children. Now, I said that was the wicked that do that. The Holman Christian Study Bible says it's the poor that go out foraging for food, not the wicked. The NASB has they, which of course is indefinite and ambiguous. The KJV also has they. They go forth to their work of thieving, stealing, robbing, and plundering. But I like the Holman Christian Study Bible option better. The poor, not the wicked, but the poor go out to their task of foraging for food. Foraging for food, that's not like you're harvesting your own crops. You're gleaning from a rich man's field. The wilderness provides nourishment for their children. In other words, the poor people don't have anywhere to house their children except to put them in the woods. Now, all the way through verse 10, we have the same question. Are we talking about the wicked who are living a hard life, or are we talking about the poor? I'm going to assume it's the poor, the righteous poor. Verse 6, they, the righteous poor, gather their fodder in the field and glean the vineyards of the wicked. Now, it was probably unpleasant for the poor to glean in the wicked's vineyard. The owner set all kinds of rules about how to glean. If you look at the book of Ruth, you might recall that. For example, how close behind the harvesters the gleaners could walk, how often the gleaners could glean, how many hours during the day they could glean. Well, you can regulate a gleaner to death even though you're allowing him the legal right to glean as the law required, but you can still regulate it to death so that the right to glean becomes academic. Now, of course, you can always take this as not referring to the poor, but rather to the wicked. As I said, Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown does that, and he says the wicked gather the vintage. Now, if you go that route, what Job is saying is the wicked get away with stuff. They get a vintage. But I don't think that's what Job is saying here. He's just talking about how poor people are oppressed by the wicked, and the wicked get away with it. Where's your judgment, God? Verse 7, without clothing they, that's the poor, spend the night naked, having no covering against the cold. Why do they spend the night naked? Because the mighty evil people are not treating them right. Drenched by mountain rains, the poor huddle against the rock, shelterless. And if you might think, well, that's no big deal, a little bit cold, it's not going to hurt anybody. I have spent a night freezing to death, and I'm telling you, there's hardly anything worse. Verse 9, the fatherless infant is snatched from the breast. He doesn't have a father, and now he doesn't have a mother because the wicked have snatched the little baby from his mother's breast. Why? Well, the nursing child of the poor is seized as collateral. Nursing child as collateral is one thing to take adolescents as a slave as collateral. I think that was probably allowed by law, but to take a nursing child? I mean, what kind of benefit, what kind of labor is a nursing child going to do for a creditor? None at all. That's just mere punitive results of collateral like that. And a collateral, of course, is not supposed to be punitive. It's just supposed to be restorative. You give back to the creditor what he's lent. So these evil people are doing this stuff to the widows and orphans. In verse 10, without clothing, they, the poor people, wander about naked. They carry sheaves but go hungry. Carrying sheaves is probably referring to the law which said that poor people could carry sheaves that were left behind by the harvesters, the reapers. Deuteronomy 24:19, when you reap your harvest in your field and have forgotten the sheaf in the field, you shall not go back to get it. It shall be for the alien, for the orphan, and for the widow, in order that the Lord your God may bless you in all the work of your hands. So you have to leave sheaves behind if you forgot them. He could be referring to sheaves that the poor make up themselves as they glean, and then they gather the gleanings and put them together in one pile, which would be a sheaf. But it doesn't matter. They're still hungry. They don't have enough. The Old Testament law was designed such that the poor people would have enough. They wouldn't be going hungry. Somebody is screwing with the law here. The bad guys are, and Job is saying it. I say the law. Again, it's not definitely determined that Job even knew the law, that the book of Job was written after the law, or the story of Job happened after the law. That, of course, is highly speculative. But the point is, if the poor had been treated properly by the wicked, the poor would not be going hungry. And Job is asking, well, God, why don't you stop this? Now we go to Job 24, verses 11 and 12. They, again, I'm going to assume that they is poor people, they crush olives in their presses. They tread the wine presses, but go thirsty. From the city men groan. The mortally wounded cry for help, yet God pays no attention to this crime. Translation problem here in verse 11, they crush olives in the presses. That's Holman Christian Study Bible. Other translations have it this way, NIV, they crush olives among the terraces, and the NIV note has, or they crush olives between the millstones. The meaning of the Hebrew for this word is uncertain. The NASB has, they crush olives within the walls. KJV has it the same way. That would be the walls of an olive press, kind of like a wine press, I suppose, but we'll just take it straightforwardly as they crush olives in their presses in an olive press, and then they also tread the wine presses. They stomp on the grapes between the walls of a wine press. So you would think, well, that's vinegar to drink, wine to drink, grapes juice to drink. No, it doesn't matter. They do all the work, but they go thirsty. They're not being rewarded for their labor. As John Gill and Adam Clark and Jameson Fawcett and Brown all say, the reason that these poor people are thirsty is because the rich owners of the olive presses and the wine presses, they wouldn't let the poor workers drink after all the work was done. Now that is particularly brutal. From the city men groan, the mortally wounded cry for help, yet God pays no attention to this crime. And so now Job returns to his main theme, which is the wicked prosper. Why does God wait to punish them? Why wait to the afterlife? What about now? And folks, I'm telling you, all you have to do is read the internet. There is injustice going on everywhere in this world, and evil people are getting away from it, and Job is just merely appealing to common observation. How in the world could Eliphaz and his two moronic false friends deny what Job is saying? So we go now to Job 24, verses 13 through 17. Job continues, the wicked are those who rebel against the light. They do not recognize its ways or stay on its paths. The murderer rises at dawn to kill the poor and needy, and by night he becomes a thief. The adulterer's eye watches for twilight, thinking, no eye will see me. He, that's the adulterer, covers his face. In the dark they, that's the wicked, break into houses. By day they lock themselves in, never experiencing the light. For the morning is like darkness to them. Surely they are familiar with the terrors of darkness. Now here we have the familiar metaphor of darkness versus light, a metaphor that's very easy to understand. The evil person had done some really bad stuff. In verse 14, he kills, he murders, and then at night he thieves, he steals. The wicked rebel against the light. They do not recognize the way of the light or stay on the path of light. Verse 15, the adulterer's eye watches for twilight. That would be the evening twilight. There's two twilights. There's the morning twilight, which we call dawn, but sometimes it's translated as twilight, meaning the morning twilight. Here it's the evening twilight because the guy, he's getting horny, he's getting lustful, he's getting randy, and he says, I'm going to go out and I'm going to steal my neighbor's wife, but I'm going to have to do it at night. And I can't do it in the open because it's shameful for me to do this. Plus, he might be married too. His wife might not like what he's doing. And so he sneaks out at night and he covers his face. He's obviously not proud of what he's doing. Now in verse 16, referring to wicked people in general, not necessarily an adulterer, in the dark, they, the wicked, break into houses. The NIV has break into houses. The NASB has they dig into houses. Adam Clark suggests perhaps they dug through the mud wall and under the clay floors. The pulpit commentary says possibly they were breaking through a weak party wall, the wall separating the burglar's house from the victim's house, and so they dug under it to steal. Now, this would explain the rest of verse 16, by day they lock themselves in. The idea is they lock themselves in their own house so that nobody can see them, and then at night they dig through the party wall and break into their neighbor's house and steal. And that's pretty devious because nobody can see him doing it. For the morning is like darkness to them. In other words, they've turned day into night. Surely they are familiar with the terrors of darkness. What this means is that evil people are afraid of light, even as honest people are afraid of dark. For the morning is like darkness to them, so the light of day comes up. Oh, we need to hide. We need to stay away from the light because we're crooks. Surely they are familiar with the terrors of darkness because they like darkness. They operate in darkness. Darkness is like light to them. We go now to Job 24, verses 18 through 21. They float on the surface of the water. Let me just stop right there. Let me read you what Barnes says, quoting a contemporary commentator named Leclerc. Leclerc says that there is scarcely any passage of the scriptures more obscure than this. And the variety of rendering adopted will show at once the perplexity of expositors. All right, so we're going to be perplexed about verse 18. They float on the surface of the water. I'll discuss that in a minute. Their section of the land is cursed. This is the wicked. Their section, their land is cursed so that they never go to their vineyards. As dry ground and heat snatched away from the melted snow, so Sheol steals those who have sinned. The womb forgets them. Worms feed on them. They are remembered no more. So injustice is broken like a tree. They prey on the childless woman who is unable to conceive and do not deal kindly with the widow. All right, well, let's take up verse 18. They float on the surface of the water. The NIV says they're like foam on the surface of the water. The NASB says they are insignificant on the surface of the water, and the they is referring to evil people. So here's examples of three commentators who try to interpret this. They float on the surface of the water. Ellicott says the wicked makes his escape over the face of the waters. They float along while people are chasing them. Benson, the commentator, says it means this. The wicked passes away into death as rushing waters pass away. So they float on the surface of the water just as water carries you downstream. So the water is going to carry the wicked downstream. Albert Barnes says that we should interpret it this way. The wicked is a light thing on the waters and glides along stealthily like a thief. Well, of those three options, I like Benson's the better. The wicked passes away into death as rushing waters pass away down a river. Now, as we get to the last part of verse 18, we see that the wicked has land that is cursed. And now we're going to see bad things happening to the wicked, which seems like a shift of gears for Job, because in the first 17 verses, he's talking about, oh, they're stealing, they're getting away with it, they're committing adultery, they're getting away with it, they're oppressing the poor, seizing their collateral, seizing their nursing babies as collateral, they're getting away with it, they're stealing flocks, they're stealing donkeys, they're pushing the poor off the roads, they're getting away with it. And now Job, all of a sudden in verse 18, is going to start saying, they're not getting away with it. They're going to be punished. Now, this transition here reflects Job's basic problem. Job knows that God punishes the wicked ultimately, and he's going to get ready to tell us here in the next few verses. But Job cannot explain why God doesn't punish all the wicked penultimately. Why not instantly, as soon as they do the wicked, wham, punish them, God? But that doesn't happen. We see as observable in this life the wicked being punished and the wicked going unpunished. That's easily observable. Two cases. And so Job just asked, well, okay, I'm going to tell you about both. I agree that the wicked sometimes are punished in this life, but not always. So why do the wicked sometimes get away with it? Now, how to explain this contradiction has been explained in several ways. The NIV Study Bible says option number one, to explain it, Job is allowing for exceptions to his general rule. In other words, his general rule is the wicked get away with murder, but every now and then they get punished. Option number two, also from the NIV Study Bible, Job is expressing a desire, not a fact. Then the translation would be, may they be like foam on the water. I wish that they would be punished. They're not. They're not actually punished. I don't know. I have problems with that. Most of the translations don't do it that way. May they be like foam. May their land be cursed. May Sheol steal with them. Job would just be expressing a desire for the punishment of the wicked, which actually doesn't happen. Or here's another option. This is my possibility, my suggestion. Job is saying that eventually the wicked will be punished. So Job is not trying to take a diametrically opposite position to his friends. He says, yeah, they'll be punished. Yes, Eliphaz, Naaman, and Bildad, yes, the wicked will be punished, but that's only eternally or eventually at the end of their life when they die and go to hell, or when they die and go to Sheol. But what about now in this life? You got a problem there because you know the wicked get away with murder. I think that's the easiest way to reconcile this apparent contradiction between Job's words concerning the wicked. Now, Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown reconcile Job by saying this, that here Job is quoting his friends ironically. In other words, he's saying this, oh, so Eliphaz and Zophar and Bildad, you really believe that the wicked have land that is cursed? Do you really believe that? Do you believe they never go to their vineyards because there's no grapes there for the wicked? Do you really believe that Sheol steals away the wicked who have sinned? Do you really believe Eliphaz and company? Do you really believe that the mothers of the wicked forget them and that worms feed on them? Do you really believe that? Well, the problem with that is you take all that as sarcastic and ironic. It does solve the problem, but I just find it unlikely that all that irony would go undetected. So I think that what Job is getting at here, he's saying, yes, Bildad, yes, Eliphaz, the wicked are punished, but only ultimately. They're not punished in the short term, not all of them. So you've got a problem with your theology. All right, so let's go through these verses to more minutely discuss what happens to the wicked. They never go to their vineyards, as I said, because there's no grapes on the vineyards. So Job said, yeah, that bad things happen to bad people. I agree with you. As dry ground and heat snatch away the melted souls, so Sheol steals those who have sinned. Yes, I agree with you, Eliphaz. The wicked ultimately will get punished. I believe in the ultimate righteousness of God. Verse 20, the womb forgets them. That's either their mother, as the NASB translates it as mother. KJV and NIV have the womb. It could be the mother, as Gil Clark and Jameson Fawcett and Brown say, but it also could be the wicked man's wife, by whom the wicked had many children, and all of his children forget the wicked man. Either way, the mother or the children forget the wicked man. So Job is saying, yes, Eliphaz, the wicked people are punished eventually. I agree with you on that. Worms feed on them. Yes, the wicked are going to die eventually. No question about that. I like some other translations here. Worms feed on them. It's Holman Christian Study Bible, but the NASB has the worm feeds sweetly until he is no longer remembered. And the KJV says the worms feed sweetly on him. The NIV says the worm feast on them. I don't know why. That just seems sort of macabre. Worms are really happy as they chomping on a corpse. The wicked are remembered no more. That's right. That happens to every wicked person. He dies and goes into his grave. So injustice is broken like a tree. So yes, justice is served, and injustice is broken like a tree. A tree is snapped by a sudden windstorm. Wham! Just like that, justice is meted out to the evil when they die, for example. Even if nothing happens before they die, they will eventually get theirs in the grave. Verse 21, Job goes back to talking about how evil the wicked are. They prey on the childless woman who is unable to conceive. Now, here's some interesting options from Gill as to how. an evil person might prey on a childless woman. Option number one, he could berate his wife because the wife of the wicked man is childless. Option number two, the wicked could reject his wife sexually as unpleasing to him, so therefore they can't have children, so she's a childless woman because he refuses to have sex with her. Or option number three, the wicked could use abortifacients to make a woman he slept with barren. Option number four, the wicked could be joining himself with harlots, not with a wife, but with harlots who are commonly barren because of STDs and such. Or option number five, the wicked could have sex with a barren woman for the purpose of irresponsibly avoiding procreation. Option number six, the wicked could abuse women, not sexually abuse them, but just abuse them, women who have lost their husbands and have no children. And so the wicked just starts mocking them. Ha ha ha, your posterity has been cut off. Well, I don't know exactly what the wicked are doing, but I'm sure they were doing bad stuff given the track record of the human race. And verse 21 finishes off, the wicked do not deal kindly with the widow. Again, widows and orphans are always treated bad by evil people. So now let's go to verses 22 through 25 of Job 24, and we will finish this chapter. Job continues, yet God drags away the mighty by his power. When he rises up, they have no assurance of life. He gives them a sense of security so they can rely on it, but his eyes watch over their ways. They are exalted for a moment, then they are gone. They are brought low and shrivel up like everything else. They wither like heads of grain. If this is not true, then who can prove me a liar and show that my speech is worthless? And so Job finishes off with saying, yes, yes, the wicked are punished. Their exaltation is only for a moment. Yes, they do prosper for a little while, but ultimately they are punished. So you're not going to accuse me, Eliphaz. You're not going to accuse me of denying the justice of God. I know that God's justice is there. I am just making a narrower point, that God's justice is not instantaneous and that the wicked get away with murder sometimes for a while. So for you to say that God punishes the wicked instantly, and therefore God is punishing me instantly for my alleged crimes, my alleged sins, does not hold water. There is not a one-and-one correspondence between righteousness and blessing, righteousness of the human and blessing from God, or sinfulness of the human and punishment from God. So lay off of me, Eliphaz. In verse 22, some translations have, he drags away the mighty by his power. Holman Christian Study Bible has, yet God drags away the mighty by his power. I think that's the way we're going to go with it. NIV has it that way too. So does the NASB. So God drags away the mighty by his power. He does justice when he rises up. When God rises up, they, meaning the wicked, have no assurance of life. You know, God, when he does get ready to judge, the wicked are in bad shape. Verse 23, he, and that's definitely God, not the wicked, God gives the wicked a sense of security. In other words, the wicked feel like they can get away with it for a while, and they do. You talk to any arrogant, blaspheming sinner out there, and they will think they got it made. Nothing's bad ever going to happen to them. So, and God allows that. When he says he gives them, God gives these wicked a sense of security. He basically means God allows them to have a sense of security. So they, the wicked, can rely on that sense of security. But God's eyes watch over their ways. In other words, he'll watch them for a while as they sin and act secure in their sin. But he's watching them. Why? Because he's going to lower the hammer on them sooner or later. Verse 24, they, the wicked, are exalted for a moment. Then they are gone. Kafluk. Look, think of Jeffrey Epstein. How many years did he get away with his grooming of kids? Horrible sex crimes. Yeah, he got away with it. He had an island for himself, and he was living high and mighty. Had all his good buddies, had Bill Clinton over there on his island. Yeah, he did real well for himself. But now he's gone. Either murdered or suicided in a jail cell. A billionaire in a jail cell. The wicked are brought low and shrivel up like everything else because they die, and dead people shrivel up. So it doesn't matter how rich or secure the evil person was, eventually he's going to shrivel up just like everybody else. He's going to be brought low. That means brought to the grave is what that means. Now, of course, Job says in verse 24, the wicked are exalted for a moment. That's something that Eliphaz and the other two false friends, they wouldn't acknowledge that the wicked are exalted for a moment. They say, the wicked do something bad. Wham, they're gone in a minute. No, that's not true. Job says, no, they are temporarily exalted and then they're brought low. They'll wither like heads of grain. I guess I assume the grain that's been cut and apart from the stalk. Eventually, it's going to wither and shrivel up. And if a wicked person is living apart from the righteousness of God, he's going to shrivel up too and die. In verse 25, Job finishes off this chapter and he says, if this is not true, then who can prove me a liar and show that my speech is worthless? Of course nobody can prove he's a liar. Of course nobody can prove Job is wrong because this is just common observation. The wicked are temporarily exalted and then they're brought down to punishment in the grave. I think that by now it is absolutely certain that Job has whipped his false friends in argument. It's not even close. A few more points here before we close it down. Verse 24, the wicked are brought low and shrivel up like everything else. The NIV says they're brought low like all others. That would mean all other human beings. If it's everything else, then the analogy would be to the grain. Just like grain is brought low, so will the wicked be brought low. Just like grain withers, so the wicked will wither. The NASB has, instead of wither, cut off. They're cut off like heads of grain, perhaps referring to the fact that sometimes grain was chopped off at the top, only at the top, as John Gill says. Quick and easy, bam, grain is cut off, just like the wicked are quick and easily cut off by God. So let me finish this chapter by making the main point for Job. Job's point is not that the wicked are never punished. It's just the fact, though, Job says, that the wicked have good things in this life before they are punished. For example, in verse 23, God gives them a sense of security. In verse 23, the wicked can rely on that security. And then in verse 24, the wicked are exalted for a moment, and then they are gone. Good job, Job. If Job could ever get his case heard in the courtroom of heaven, in God's courtroom, I think he'd do a good job. But in the courtyard of his, in the courtroom of his false friends, he has whipped their behinds. But they're not going to quit. Because in our next chapter, chapter 25 of Job, we will entitle that chapter, Bildad Speaks, Man Cannot Be Righteous. In other words, Job, you can't be righteous. You're sinning, Job. That's why you're scraping the boils off your skin. So ladies and gentlemen, we'll listen to some more of Bildad's bilge in our next audio, which I hope you stay tuned for. And I hope you enjoyed this audio.